Welcome to MGO Podcast 7.8. This is a basketball preview with a hockey addendum podcast, so put on your basketball hats and your hockey pants. A conveniently timed bye week, we thought we would take the opportunity to have a basketball preview podcast because this year's team looks deep and should be good.
Yeah, it's a shockingly deep team for a John Beilein squad.
A shockingly old team for a Beilein squad.
That too.
By which we mean it's not literally all freshmen and will finish like 330th in KenPom's age metric.
They're going to bump into the 200s this year. It'll be quite something.
I bet they get to 170.
Yeah, that'll
really
be something.
That's my guess. 172, which would be average-ish.
Very precise guess.
Yeah, well, that's what I do. I guess precisely. And then 8 years later, Spartan fans keep sending me the link to something I wrote 8 years ago because they think I care. But anyway. This year's team, once healthy, should be Beilein's deepest by forever. I mean, there are legitimate options going down the roster at every spot. The only thing that looks like it might be a little bit thin is center. And they've got options there. We just don't know
how
good any of them are past Doyle, who I will ride for his entire career.
Until death.
He's definitely like, I'm definitely in like the Norfleet zone with him where I like him better than
everybody
else.
You're on hashtag Team Doyle.
I'm on Team Doyle, but let's start off with the point guards. So Spike Albrecht should be ready to go for the beginning of the season. Also, Derek Walton, who was shut down midseason last year, never really looked right before that. And as a sophomore point guard under John Beilein, we were all expecting
the leap.
Which is what happened. But Walton, except when he was inexplicably really good at rebounding, just didn't have the explosion that you need in your point guard. His shooting suffered, his defense suffered, his play suffered, everything suffered because he was suffering.
Yeah, no, I mean, he mentioned it at media availability a couple of weeks ago where he was just like, it's nice to be able to jump again. And it was like, well, yeah, that would be useful as a guard to be able to do that. So, I mean, for him, I mean, he had a couple of things he did pretty well last year. I mean, he's still ran the offense okay as a point guard, and he did, like you mentioned, rebound the ball somewhat spectacularly for a point guard. And on those, he was able to jump off 2 feet, which I think helped quite a bit. But his explosion going to the rim, which is such a big part of his game, was just not there at all, and his two-point percentage was awful as a result, and that just took away
many
facets of his game.
Who, as a freshman, had that take to the bucket in the Nebraska game. He had a take to the bucket in the Michigan State game, both of which were critical and both of which were kind of eye-opening, man, this guy can go get it moments. And that was entirely absent last year.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff that you saw in transition, you know, that really helped open things up for the offense when it wasn't necessarily going in half court. He just wasn't able to bring that last year. And so he says he's fully healthy, and I expect him to look like a totally different player this year now that he's got both feet under him.
Well, and the other thing that I thought hurt him is that when he was a freshman, a lot of the offense ran through Stauskas.
Yes.
And he turned out to be a really good off-the-ball shooter, a guy who was 40% from three on a lot of catch and shoots. And those kind of evaporated last year as Michigan struggled to figure out who was going to be their go-to guy, who was going to create the offense. And part of that was LeVert being hurt. Part of that was Walton being hurt. Part of it was Zach Irvin not having emerged into a guy who can create shots for other people. So that kind of element from his game just kind of disappeared, not because of him, but because of the rest of the team.
Yeah, I mean, last year kind of had an unfortunate, like, the things never really came together at the same time where Walton was injured. Irvin's stuff didn't come together until Walton and LeVert had already been hurt.
Yeah.
And so that really limited our ability to be able to see what they can do when they're at full strength. And I think once all those guys are able to do what they can do, I mean, Walton's an excellent spot-up shooter. LeVert should be able to handle a lot more of the point guard duties. You got Spike there, too, although Beilein's talking about, especially with the depth in the rotation this year, I don't know how much we're going to see of the two point guards out there at the same time. Beilein was talking at Media Day like that's something he's not expecting to show that often. We'll see, but...
No, I mean, at this point, unless they come up against a VCU, like, they're... Doesn't seem like there would be a need for it.
Yeah, there's no need to have those two small guys out there, but there still should be some ability with the guys that they'll have out there, especially now that Irvin's shown that he can handle the ball a little bit and create some offense for himself. Hopefully, Walton will be able to spot up a little bit more and get back up, back close to that 40% three-point shooting mark that he was at as a freshman.
Yeah, and so Walton will be the starter. I think he's the biggest X factor on the team and possibly in the league just because Beilein point guard who should have taken the leap. Has all the talent that you would need to take said leap, but didn't get to last year. Is that all injury or is that maybe he's disappointed? We've heard that he looks really good now. So if he can emerge into an upper echelon Big Ten point guard, well, then that means Michigan has two of them.
Yeah.
Because we saw Spike a lot last year. I think he played more than we ever thought he would. And at times he was masterful. I remember that Ohio State game. Where he was just swooping into the lane against Amir Williams, and it worked.
It did somehow.
And some of that is Amir Williams, but some of that was just Spike playing, I think, better than we expected he could. So he got out of the season with the offensive rating that was still pretty dang good. Low usage. He's always going to be a guy who, when he takes a two-point shot, he's got to be, like, sneaky about it.
Where he does. The little underhand scoop shot or... You know, there's going to be some level of deception there, but he's managed to make it work for himself. I mean, he's a great distributor. He had the sixth best assist rate in the conference last year. But on top of that, he actually shot almost 48% from two in conference play.
Which for him is a massive win.
With a high free throw rate. I mean, which is bizarre.
That is bizarre.
But he had the 16th best free throw rate in the conference, and then he gets to the line and knocks down 90% of his free throws. So, I mean, you're never quite sure how he's doing it with Spike because it just doesn't make any sense that a little 5'11 guy who is not really athletic.
5'11.
a generous 5'11 is doing the things that he does, but his outside shooting opens up a lot for him because his ability to just spot up and shoot from 25. I mean, he really extends the range beyond the three-point line to the point where you have to account for him out there because he's proven time and again that if you just let him launch, he's going to do it and he's very liable to make it.
Yeah, because once Walton and LeVert went down, I think Michigan fans were bracing for a pretty miserable season.
Yes.
And Spike and Irvin and Dawkins, and to a lesser extent Marr, kind of rescued it. They weren't great, of course, but you know they were basically a 500 Big Ten team with spare parts.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like this could be a basement-level Big Ten team with the way the season was going. And for those guys, just to drag them back up to average or even kind of above average sort of towards the end of the year, that was surprising.
Yeah. So I think the point guard situation here is terrific. You've got a senior who I would be comfortable with as the starter who's going to back up Walton, who could be a star. And then if foul trouble crops up or it's a matchup thing or just someone gets hurt, you have Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman, who has a spectacular name and last year came off the bench to score 18 at Michigan State, a fearless penetrator, a guy who looks like he could be very much a plus on defense. His issues last year were shooting. And as we've seen, shooting issues under John Beilein don't often last. He gets everybody to be at least okay. He doesn't recruit you unless he thinks that you can be at least okay. So if he can develop that, you know, he's a guy who next year is definitely going to be in line for a bunch of playing time. This year, I mean, I don't know if you can redshirt him just because you're going to want him on the floor for periods of time. But he's a guy who, you know, if you look at his free throw shooting, you know, once he gets big enough and strong enough to get to the line a lot, that's going to be a huge asset. I think as an upperclassman, he's going to be really good. I just can't find minutes for him this year.
Yeah, it's going to be tough because there really is just a logjam on the wings, and Michigan is so set at point guard that there shouldn't be much of a need for him there. But I think the biggest thing I'm looking out of him this year is not just his his shooting from beyond the arc, but also his finishing around the basket, because that was kind of touch and go last year a little
bit.
It
was.
He got to the line pretty well, but there was his ability to get to the basket is great. I mean, he's really good at getting there, and now it's about, you know, kind of kind of staying within himself, finishing it, because he had somewhere almost
I remember
rocketing back off the other side.
I remember the first, I think it was probably his first actual drive to the bucket. And it looked fantastic until he threw the ball so hard off the backboard it didn't even like graze the rim.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, calm down, buddy.
There were some moments where he looked very freshman-like in his finishing. But that's stuff that should calm down. And like you mentioned, the free throw stuff, which usually, if you establish yourself as a good free throw shooter, that tends to eventually extend itself to the rest of your shooting ability.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He was 14 for 15 from the line last year, which obviously small sample size, but excellent sample.
Yeah.
And that's something. He had a couple spots. His right corner threes, I thought he was pretty good at knocking those down last year, and he was good from the left wing too. And those are a couple spots where he can kind of spot up and hopefully be a plus there. And we'll see if there's much of a need for him to do that much else this year.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of reminds me of a Penn State good guard, if that makes any sense, where he could be the best player on a bad basketball team pretty easily.
Yeah, just a high volume.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a guy who can get like his Iverson shots against anybody. But molding that into something that fits in Michigan is something that might take another year. I am pretty confident that he'll get there.
Yeah, and he's a guy who, I mean, they've got time to develop him. They've got the ability to develop him in this system this year where they don't need to throw him out there for a ton of minutes. And it seems like it's all about when he'll get there. But if he's not at the point this year that they need him to be, then they can probably just put somebody else in the game.
I mean, are we talking red shirts here? Like this is a situation where.
Yeah. Ideally, yes. But it's just so hard to figure with this team in terms of who's going to be able to play, who's going to emerge. And I think a lot of it's going to be so dependent on who emerges actually at the four, I think.
Come on. All right, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the wings. We're going to skip Karis for now. We're going to talk about what happens at the three and the four.
Yes.
And I've been saying this, I think, since the season ended, that I expect Dawkins and Irvin to get 30 minutes a game each, with Irvin the nominal four.
Yeah, and I think that's the lineup that makes the most sense in terms of getting Michigan's best five out there and getting the guys that most fit in with what Beilein wants to do with an offense out there.
Yeah.
And especially with Irvin really rounding out his game towards the end of last year,
Slotting
him in at the four. I mean, it'll be interesting when Michigan has to go against some of these teams in the Big Ten that are going to be able to roll out two legit bigs, because there are a few of those in the conference this year.
It's like Purdue, but who else?
Purdue and Maryland.
Maryland.
Maryland's definitely got some guys. And Michigan has the lineup flexibility to be able to match up against those guys. I think it might take them out of their comfort zone a little bit. But Irvin also showed last year that he's at least able to pass as a guy who can get down there and bang in the post with some big men.
Yeah, he's kind of in the GR3 mold where, you know, you're never going to look at him at the four and be like, well, that's going to be great defensively. But he can get what he needs to get done.
Yeah, and then he's providing matchup issues on the other end,
right,
when those guys have to then go and defend a legit 3-point threat. But it's just, there are a lot of guys jammed in behind Irvin and Dawkins at the three and the four.
There are, but let's not quite move on to them yet, because we should talk about those two guys. So Irvin diversified his game, became more than a just 3-point guy. I mean, we were talking before the season about how he needed to become a threes and something, whether that was defense or rebounding or creating offense. And I think we got a little bit more than that late in the season, where he turned into a guy who like never, ever assisted on passes. And by the end of the season, he was consistently one of Michigan's top assist guys.
Yeah, I mean, he more than doubled his assist rate last year from where it was as a freshman. And that was, most of that came towards the end of the season, where if you just isolated the last dozen games or so, and it'd be even more stark of a difference. But
well, why don't you click the Big Ten only box on KenPom?
I did. He raises his assist rate up to just under 12%,
Which is pretty good for a guy who was at like 3 or something as a freshman.
It was his total as a freshman was 4.7, but if you isolated conference only, it was 2.2, which is low.
It is low. So this is a guy who developed as a driver, developed as a distributor, and you know, I thought his all-around game took a major leap forward, and by the end of the year, he was a guy that you could use as a third banana in terms of generating offense on, I think, on one of the nation's best.
Yeah. No, he developed, you know, he's got a bit of a rip-through move now that he can use to get to the basket. He's got a kind of slow-developing crossover that he can use to get to the basket a little bit. And that's all you need. I mean, because he's a guy who is liable to shoot from anywhere, and you have to respect that. So you don't need to be Steve Nash when you can do that. You just need to have one or two moves that can get you past a guy who's closing out hard. And he's got that now. And his court vision really, I thought, took a big leap forward last year, where he was just starting to see guys, too, that he was not seeing his freshman year.
No, he was the guy who was setting up a number of those Dawkins alley-oops that were reminiscent of GR3. With the notable exception that Dawkins in Big Ten plays shot 50% from three-point range.
Which is a nice addition to the GR3 arsenal, which I would say.
Just Dayton and Michigan, that was it.
That's it. That is it.
For the son of a D1 head coach.
We're never going to understand this.
No, we're never, but thank you.
At no point.
Rest of basketball for...
Yeah, good luck, everybody.
Dumping this freak in our laps. So Dawkins is being talked up as the most improved guy on the roster. And if that actually is true, if Beilein has worked his Beilein offensive magic with him and he can generate anything on his own, holy crap.
I mean, yeah, this guy finished first in the conference in effective field goal percentage last year in conference play because he was just making it rain. And he's also an athletic marvel.
Yeah. So I think for Dawkins, we're talking about the same thing we were talking about Irvin last year, where we want him to become an and guy.
Yes.
Where, you know, last year he didn't really crash the offensive boards, and I know Michigan wants to get back. But I think with Dawkins in particular, that's a guy that if you let him go crash those boards, he's going to have an appreciable effect on the game just because of his athleticism.
Yeah, because he didn't post very impressive rebounding numbers at all, but I felt like we had, especially like after games going through photos from Fuller and Upchurch and just seeing there'd be one every couple of games where we'd just have a holy crap picture of Dawkins about 6 feet floating above the ground, clutching some offensive rebound that just seemed impossible to get to. Usually off a missed three-pointer or something because it takes something caroming really far away from the basket. But his athleticism is such a difference maker on that end that it seems like it'd be a good idea to unleash him. And I know you mentioned him needing to be a threes and guy. I don't know on this roster. I mean, if you've got Walton and LeVert and Irvin who are able to handle the ball, he can really just be kind of a spot up shooter and alley-oop finisher.
Yeah.
And have that be his game for most of this year. And as long as they don't suffer any injuries, they're not going to have to ask him to do much more than that.
Yeah, that's true. It would be nice if he was like a threes and, I don't know, lockdown defensive perimeter player.
Yes, that would be really helpful if he brought along his ability on defense because he looked lost on that end a little bit more than he was very freshman on that end.
Yes.
And developing there. I mean, he's certainly developed physically quite a bit since his freshman year. Camp Sanderson treated him well. So hopefully that'll translate to better defense from him. Cause I think with him, it's all mental on that end. And he's got all the physical ability in the world to be a solid defender.
He does. And he's got the size, he's rangy. He obviously can jump out of the gym, so it's just kind of about figuring it out. And Michigan really hasn't had a guy who is a lights-out defender under John Beilein.
No.
I mean, maybe Jordan Morgan. But other than that, like in terms of a perimeter guy, and this year's team, you've got two guys who at least have that potential in Dawkins and Marr. So whether we actually get to see it, who knows?
Yeah.
Especially with Marr struggling to find minutes, we think. But it's at least a possibility.
It is, and an exciting one.
And then we kind of haven't even gotten around to a guy who could have gone in the first round of the last NBA draft but decided to come back for his senior season. That is, of course, Caris LeVert, a 6'7 shooting guard who has 40% three-point efficiency when things are going well and can get to the basket, can get basically wherever he wants on the court in a kind of languorous fashion.
Yes.
Where he's not the quickest guy, but he has control of the ball and he's so lanky that often you'll, I remember, if you remember that Duke game where he was just getting to the basket and then he was too tall for anyone to do anything about it. So it's one of those things where he goes down midseason. His usage last year was too high. So when Michigan had Stauskas, Stauskas had the highest usage on the team, but it was like 22%, 23%. And Caris was at 26 last year. And that's not actually that high for a star player.
No.
But the way that we've seen Beilein create these teams that are number one nationally in offensive efficiency, he does it by sharing the ball almost equally except for the center.
Yeah.
And that was not the case last year. And Caris kind of, he stopped the ball a little bit. There were a lot of kind of like, I'm going to dribble the ball for 15 seconds. I'm not going to do this as part of the flow of the offense kind of stuff. And I think we would have seen that get worked out in the second half of last year, but
there was no second half of the last year for him, unfortunately.
We didn't have that opportunity. But still, this is a guy who has all the physical traits you would want in an NBA first-round shooting guard, and he's going to have a senior year. People are saying he's completely fine now, and he's playing really extraordinarily well. It's just a matter of getting back to that kind of Stauskas-era zen where you are content with getting your shots when you need to get your shots, but mostly it's just let's run the offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think with him, a huge key is going to be limiting those herky-jerky, time-consuming drives to end-of-clock situations where that comes in really handy, yeah. Where he can bail your team out by just being able to, you know, you can just dump the ball off to him and have him create a shot. And that will come in quite handy, but hopefully will come in handy in the last 10 seconds of the shot clock and not too often otherwise. He's an excellent passer. He's an excellent shooter. It'd be nice to get him finishing a little bit more around the basket, which we saw a little bit from last year.
Yeah.
Where he filled out a little bit more and was looking a little bit more comfortable.
Play through contact.
Yeah, finishing through contact, but still his only 2-point percentage was around 43%, which is not
great.
Not where you want it. So hopefully, I mean, he's continued to bulk up. And we'll see where he's at this year with it. I'm not expecting him to be a spectacular finisher, but it'd be nice for him to finish around 45% there and at least be somebody who's somewhat reliably finishing around the basket or at least drawing contact and getting the line.
He's going to be 33. He's going to be in his 10th NBA season. And in the preseason, whoever his team is going to be like, well, he really bulked up this year. So like he's always...
He's now at 211 pounds.
He's always going to be slightly larger. It's a never-ending process for him. But yeah, he's bigger this year, and playing to contact is the main thing that NBA types are kind of worried about. And having him be able to do that, I think, would be a very encouraging sign. The guys that are backing the spot up, we've got Mar again, who might see some time at the two. Duncan Robinson, who... You know, we are talking about how Dawkins doesn't really need to be more than a threes guy on offense. Well,
this is the most doesn't need to be anything but threes guy.
So
out
like
there.
6'8", 6'7", pure shooter who is challenging or breaking Stauskas' records in practice. Not nearly as dynamic an offensive player, I think people are saying. But as a guy who might come off the bench and you find him in the corner for a three-pointer, it's going to be one of the best options you have. I think John Diebler is.
I was about to say tall John Diebler is I think the what we're looking at here.
And Diebler really thrived because he was playing with Sullinger.
Yeah,
and Sullinger would occupy dudes, and they would just get to the corner, and he would knock it down. He was at over 50% on the season, I think, that year. And Michigan's not going to have the one guy who has to have that focus, but in this context where you have Irvin and Walton and Caris all creating the offense, that could be a situation where he's the fourth, fifth option, and he just gets a low number but a highly efficient set of shots.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, you've got three guys who can play the drive and kick game with him, and you've also got Robinson having the size to be able to be a guy who can come up and set a screen for those guys and play some pick and pop.
Yeah.
And that is really going to be tough to defend if he's on the money with those.
And he's also tough to close out because he's so big. Like, so can you really have much of an impact on what he's doing?
It is tough to affect the shot of a guy who's 6'8".
Yeah. And then the rest of his game, I don't know.
Who cares? I mean, obviously it'll be nice if he can, you know, we'd like to see him be able to defend some.
Yes. That was kind of what I was kind of getting at.
Because everything offense, it's whatever. The other people can dribble. Other people can take the ball to the basket. Other people could post up. They just need him to shoot.
Yeah.
Defense, obviously, you're going to have to find a place to, I don't necessarily hide say him. Hide him, but yeah, I was going to say hide him. Because we don't know. We'll see if he's got the foot speed. Obviously, there's a big difference between D3 guards and Division I Big Ten guards in terms of the quickness that you're dealing with in addition to the size.
There are going to be guys he can D up in this league. Like, maybe not all of them, but especially at 6'8", he's a guy you can play at the 4.
Yes.
And get away with it against people who aren't that great. And there are going to be a number of those. I think it is going to be kind of a matchup issue where there are going to be certain games where it's like, I don't know if we can put him out there.
Yeah, I think there might be some games where they can't give him the minutes that they would like to. But there are also going to be games where if there's another team with, a garbage man type 4 out there or a 2 guard who isn't a great shooter, some if you've got a guy out there with any sort of deficiency where you can just kind of hide him.
Yeah.
Then he can have a huge effect as just a spot up guy. And he's going to be, a guy who might put up 3 or 6 points for a bunch of games, then all of a sudden explode for 15 in a game.
Yeah.
Or he might swing a couple games just because of his ability to light it up from the outside. Because I've seen him in practice shoot around a couple times. His shooting ability is absurd.
I have a prediction that Minnesota and Illinois bloggers will hate him. maybe not so much Maryland this year, but.
Yeah.
But if
I look forward to Illinois fans heckling him and then just getting rained on in the grand tradition of Stauskas.
I don't know if Robinson has quite as much swag as
he's not going to troll as hard as there was only one Stauskas for that. But
and then Michigan has a selection of gentlemen who are probably stretch fours. There's one guy who I think is definitively a stretch four, and we're going to cover him here. And the other guys we're going to talk about is as posts, just because I think that's where there is actual playing time to be acquired.
Yes.
So that's Cam Chapman, the highly touted recruit.
Somewhat enigmatic at this point.
Out of California, who was terrible. I don't think that's overstating at all. He was atrocious for probably 3 quarters of this year. And then towards the end, you know, he started putting together a little bit. We saw some of his passing ability. He's a long guy. He's a legit 6'8 with long arms. Obviously has some defensive upside. And, you know, if Michigan can fix that shot, which went off the side of the backboard almost as often as it went in. I think I remember his first game, he airballed all 3 of his 3-point attempts. It's just one of those things where it's not going to fly with the John Beilein offense. But you saw him and you thought that he looked much improved.
Yeah, in the first open practice that they had for the media, I was very intently watching him with the around the world shooting drills that they were doing, and it looked like his mechanics were improved. He was getting his shot up quicker. His form looked a little bit more natural, and most importantly, they were going in at a pretty decent rate. Now, obviously, these are going in against either no defenders or a student manager holding up a broom or something like that. So it's not quite the same as a game situation. And so you don't want to take too much away from that. But I think it was important that the mechanics looked better and that the shot was getting off quicker. Because with him last year, he had a slow release.
Yeah.
And on top of everything else with the game, you know, clearly moving much faster than what he was used to. And he seemed kind of rushed.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a recipe for those ugly shots that we saw. And hopefully he can get that ironed out, because if he can become at least a decent spot-up shooter, there's a lot that he can bring to this team in terms of his rebounding, because he's got those really long arms. I think he's a plus rebounder, especially on the defensive end. His passing is impressive for a 4. he did turn the ball over a little bit more than you'd like to see last year, where he tried to force some kind of flashy passes, but that's freshman stuff. Hopefully we'll get ironed out and we'll see. I mean, the luxury for Michigan this year is they've got so many options there that if these issues haven't been resolved, then it probably just means Chapman's going to ride the bench.
Yep. It is. But he's obviously a guy who there's a lot of potential with, and it would be nice to see him kind of approach that.
Yeah. Come close to fulfilling that potential.
Because this is a critical year for him. There's going to be playing time available. And then next year, you've got a couple of other guys who are in the system who are going to address as fives. And you've got recruits coming in. It's like, it's kind of now or never for him, I think, in terms of proving that he deserves to be on the court.
Yeah, if he doesn't establish himself as a critical rotation player this year, or at least a rotation player, then there are guys who might pass him, and that could kind of spell the end of his ability to contribute to this team,
because
it's tough to catch guys who are younger than you.
It is. All right, moving on to center. I'm Team Doyle, as this podcast has already talked about. I thought that when he was able to stay on the court last year, which wasn't that often because he apparently just was a magnet for every virus in the Ann Arbor area.
Stay away from me, Ricky Doyle.
I also sweat on you, too. But I thought that when he was able to go full blast, I thought he was great for a freshman. And, like, that's – like I know that sounds hyperbolic for a guy with his numbers, but I'm going to go with it. Like, he was already at that kind of, like, Morgan level on the pick and roll, and he had post moves that I don't think we've actually seen from a Michigan big, so they dumped it down to him a couple times against Frank Kaminsky.
Yeah.
And – he used his skill to score a basket, which I didn't know that centers could do.
This is a very alien concept to Michigan fans, but
and I don't think the post up is ever going to be that big of a part of his game or Michigan's game. But for him to be able to do that as a freshman, really encouraging. And then I thought he was far better than anybody else Michigan had the five last year at the hedge and return that is pretty much the cornerstone of Michigan's defense.
His feet are surprisingly quick for a guy of that size, and that was actually quite noticeable during the open practice when they were just doing defensive drills where they were just working on getting in their stance and shuffling back and forth between basically the two sides of the paint. And he looked quicker than some of the guards on that drill.
Yeah, and I thought that came through when he was able to be on the court and not exhausted.
Yeah, it was very – I mean, that was something that Jordan Morgan was really good at and was probably, I think, the biggest thing that Morgan brought to the defense in addition to his excellent positioning was that
– the hard hedge.
Yeah, he could get out on that hedge and recover before the other team could take advantage of it. And Doyle's the same way, and Doyle brings more shot-blocking upside than Morgan ever did.
Yeah, I think
that it hasn't totally shown through yet, but I think he's got that potential.
No, I think this is a guy who's, you know, Camp Sanderson is going to do a lot for, because last year he was almost blocking a lot of shots. So if he can just get a couple more inches of vertical, then that becomes a factor you have to deal with.
Yeah, and to get back to the offensive side, that post-up ability, I mean, he's got a legit drop step and he's got a legit hook shot.
Yeah, that little baby hook was surprisingly effective even as a freshman.
Yeah, and I mean, he shot 60% from the field last year. It did go down in Big Ten play. It dropped closer to 50%, but that's kind of to be expected when you're going up against legit big men.
And you lose Walton and you lose
Irving. Yeah, guys are able to collapse on you a lot more. And I still thought, in terms of going up against the top-tier teams and holding his own, because we saw with Michigan's other bigs, when Michigan went up against teams with legit post guys, those guys were overwhelmed.
They were a disaster.
And with Doyle, he didn't just tread water. He looked like he could at least hold his own out there.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that he was winning those matchups, but that he belonged on the court with those guys.
So there are kind of the two big, I think, issues. One of them I think is a little bit overblown, and that's his defensive rebounding rate last year, which is very low. But to me, I thought that was just because Michigan was doing that strategically, so that all they wanted him to do was box out the opposing big, and then everybody else would go crash the boards. And, you know, I think it would be nice if we saw him improve his personal numbers this year, But really, I'm just looking at the team numbers when it comes to rebounding.
Yeah, Michigan's team numbers are, I mean, if you flip Doyle's defensive rebounding numbers with Walton's, you've got a team distribution that looks normal, and which is bizarre, but because you're talking about your point guard and your center flipping there. But that, I mean, you could tell that was absolutely by design. Doyle was constantly sealing off the paint, and one of the guards would just run in and grab the ball, and that worked. You know, Michigan wasn't a great defensive rebounding team by any stretch, but for a Beeline team, they were solid.
Yeah.
And you saw with Bielefeld and Donnell out there that they were getting better
individual
personal rebounding numbers,
yeah.
But the team rebounding, I think, suffered with those guys out there because they were doing more just jumping for the ball, going after it, and it was leaving more putback opportunities, more offensive rebound opportunities. The team rebounding wasn't as sound with those guys out there. And a lot of it was also because they just weren't as sound defensively in the first place. So the shots were leading.
Yeah,
there was more chaos
center.
Leading up to the shots.
Yeah.
But with Doyle, I'm not concerned with the rebounding from his end. I mean, he's a 6'9", solidly built guy he's excellent, not quite excellent, but very good on the offensive rebounding end. And I think that is more a solid gauge of how good you are as a pure rebounder.
The other issue, hands. So Doyle occasionally didn't catch the ball, which is bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't J.C. Mathis bad.
No.
But it was kind of an issue that I thought was real and one of those things where if it doesn't improve this year, that's just going to be kind of a flaw that he has going forward, a very frustrating one where occasionally Michigan loses a rebound or loses a scoring opportunity and has a turnover because Doyle's hands are momentarily of stone.
Yeah, and as big men flaws go, I mean, that's both a pretty standard one and one that I don't think is too crushing for Doyle. I mean, he kept his turnover rate down pretty low last year.
Yeah, his turnovers were bad, though.
And yeah, so I mean, like,
it's like
aesthetically, they're not good.
Yeah.
And in terms of, you know, how they come, you'd like to see, you know, catch the dang ball. But at the same time, if his turnover rate's down around 12% again, like it was last year, It's tough to complain too much, especially when you've got a guy who's pretty reliable for converting post up opportunities.
Well, and he was I don't want to say elite, but I'm going to do it. He was elite at finishing on the pick and roll.
There it is.
So he finished very capably with both hands, and he was able to get up to those spots where it's very hard to miss, which Morgan couldn't do.
Yeah,
you know, Morgan was a brilliant finisher, but his natural gifts don't compare to Ricky Doyle.
He was a below-the-rim player.
Right, and Ricky Doyle's not an above-the-rim player, but he's an at-the-rim player.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought that was a really spectacular freshman season from a big who was a three-star out of nowhere. And I think he's going to improve a lot this year, and people are going to enjoy the Ricky Doyle experience.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, with those pick-and-roll opportunities, Michigan wasn't able to run nearly as much pick-and-roll as they wanted to last year because of all the injuries to the guards. And this year, I think that's going to be a much bigger part of the offense.
Yes.
And Doyle's going to benefit a lot from that.
Yes, definitely. Backing him up are guys.
They're people.
I guess.
Humans.
So Mark Donnell got the most playing time last year, in which he did poorly. I think we can say that he was defensively targeted as soon as he got on the court very frequently, had a huge foul rate.
Yes.
Didn't really contribute much offensively, didn't really develop into that pick and pop center that we were hoping to see. Was just a redshirt freshman, and bigs are terrible usually when they're young. Guy who was not the exception to the rule that I thought Doyle was. So not someone you want to write off by any stretch of the imagination, but someone who I will feel trepidation when he plays until I shouldn't anymore.
Absolutely. I mean, especially with the amount of hype that he was getting a couple of years ago when he was just a practice player and then heading into last season where it really sounded like
the ideal Beeline big.
Yes. And so obviously last year was a somewhat massive letdown compared to those expectations.
What was his foul rate, by the way?
6.4 per 40 minutes, and that shot up to, when you were going against top 100 teams, shot up to about 8.
That's...
which is astronomical.
That's a lot.
You can't stay on the floor.
No, you can't.
And that was something that the eye test also bore that out.
Yes,
where
it did.
You could see that he was just overmatched in the post most of the time against anybody who was really half decent down there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, I think the biggest thing for him is just to be able to survive defensively. And then on offense, we did see flashes of him being able to step out and knock down three-pointers.
Flashes.
He was 7 for 19 last year.
Not bad.
Which is, yeah, you know, on the whole, decent. Most of that came in non-conference play, unfortunately. And he looked viable as a rebounder, too. He wasn't great at converting those second shot opportunities. He just didn't look confident around the basket a lot.
Yeah, I remember a couple of pick and roll opportunities where he didn't even go up with the ball. And the contrast between him and Doyle in that department was vast, where he just didn't, he thought he was going to get rejected.
Yeah.
And he might have.
The number of times where I yelled, just go up with it.
Yeah, shoot the ball.
It was almost always directed at
the Jake Rudock of the football team. The basketball team.
Yeah, where you gotta at least go up strong and get foul. I mean, at the very least, get fouled. But if you're going to have that much trepidation around the basket, it's going to end in disaster almost every time.
Put your shoulders to the rim. So a guy who very much a finesse player in high school, I thought he had potential, and hopefully we'll get to see him develop at least this year into a guy who you can put out there for 5-10 minutes and be okay. The other guy who I think is pretty interesting, you saw him and he was playing the four, but DJ Wilson is a guy who, when I saw him last year in the practice session, I thought, man, this guy is a potentially great shot blocker, a bouncy 6'9" with long arms and great timing and skinny.
Yes.
Very much skinny last year. So he got some playing time before Michigan put him on the shelf with a Devin Gardner-style injury. And he got wrecked, I think we can say.
He just looked totally lost when he was out on the floor.
he got wrecked with a T. That's how wrecked he got.
Yeah.
And this is a major, major guy for Camp Sanderson, a guy who, if you can put the LeVert weight on him, like every year it's going to be like, oh, yeah, DJ Wilson. Another 10 pounds.
Well, and he kind of jumped a level or two past what I expected him to. He's already listed at 6'10", 240, which is...
That's pretty big.
Quite legitimate. And he looks completely different than what he did last year. And he looks like he could be a viable five.
Eating a lot of gravy.
He's eating a lot of everything. I mean...
gravy on his gravy.
Gravy on his gravy. athletically, he's got the most potential of any of Michigan's bigs. I don't think there's any question about that. He's got some range to his shot.
He does. We didn't see that last year, but as a high schooler, he was a pretty good three-point shooter.
Yes, and we'll see. I mean, I think for him, it's all about how much has he familiarized himself with the system and how comfortable does he feel within it.
Yeah.
And then... can he hold up at the five? Because that's going to be where the most opportunity is for him to see the floor.
Yeah, because Doyle is not going to be on the floor for 35 minutes a game.
Yeah, especially if, you know, the flu goes around this winter or something, then who knows?
Eats a bad apple or something. I'm hoping we can get 30 from him, but I'm more realistically expecting 25.
Yes.
So who's filling in behind there and how competent are they? Those are big questions for the team. And finally... they call him Mo Wheezy, and he's probably very confused by that.
Almost certainly.
He probably thinks that they're actually called Rapists. The team is like, no, yeah, it's Rapist. I'm sorry. Is that not what it is in German? But anyway, Moritz Wagner is a guy. He's apparently 6'10" or 6'11". I kind of expect a red shirt. At this point, just given the chatter we're hearing out of the program where it's like, guy has a ton of potential. This is another level of basketball for him, and it's going to take some time for him to adapt.
Yeah, and I think something that definitely points to that is that they've been practicing him a lot at the five, and I don't think he's going to be physically ready to do that this year to play at that position. And Michigan does have some other options. I mean, it just seems like he's kind of DJ Wilson last year. He's not as skinny as Wilson was, and he has played against – higher competition than DJ Wilson had at that point, at least with some of his international experience. But I think it would be overwhelming for him to get thrown out there at this point. But he's got a very intriguing skill set as a guy who can really stretch the floor from that five spot.
If he really is 6'11", a Euro big with that kind of size.
And he can put the ball on the floor a little bit.
Yeah, you're kind of like looking at him and being like, can you be a Wisconsin big?
Yes.
Can you do that? Because if John Beilein ever gets his hands on like a Wisconsin big,
it's game over, man.
Game over.
KenPom's going to have to redo the formula or something.
Invent new numbers. Yeah, man.
Anyway, while we're daydreaming about that.
Yeah, let's just kind of like pause and consider. So that's the team. Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk kind of holistically. So I don't think that this team is getting the credit that they should, which isn't a surprise to me, but they're not even in the original AP poll. They're 26. They're the first team out. And even that feels low to me. Like, I have very high expectations for this group. I expect them to be a Sweet 16 seed, if that doesn't sound crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I just think between the coaching that we just know that they're going to get, because John Beilein has and his staff have proven time and again that they will get the most out of a healthy group. And this is more experience than they've ever had to work with and more depth than they've ever had to work with.
Yeah,
I know there are some very talented teams in the Big Ten, but a lot of these talented teams in the Big Ten are relying on impact freshmen, a lot of new faces, and are dealing with some major departures. And with Michigan, they're not really dealing with any of that.
No, they aren't, and they don't really seem to have a weak point that some of these other teams do. So Indiana is, again, going to be running out a hilariously small lineup,
yes,
I think, for the most part. Purdue is very large, but that hasn't really helped them very much previously. Michigan State, I don't know what they're going to do at point guard this year. I mean,
they got Tum Tum.
I know. It's like, can you really play that guy?
They've got Aaron Harris.
Aaron Harris is not a point guard.
He's not a point guard at all. They might have to use him there a little bit and then have Denzel Valentine play point forward. But
yeah, so I mean, and Maryland feels overhyped just because I don't think Mark Turgeon has ever really lived up to it. I know Ira, who is the radio guy here at WTK, where we film.
Oh,
we
God.
Film our podcast. But he
should have warned me.
He's pretty skeptical of all the Maryland hype. He thinks they should be good, but he just doesn't think that Turgeon is that level of coach.
Yeah, and I'm also skeptical of the Melo Trimble being the best point guard in the Big Ten hype that he's getting, because I think he's so reliant on getting in line.
Yeah, I'll take Yogi myself.
I would definitely take Yogi over him, and that's also because Yogi Ferrell is very, very good. But
and stupid. Three-pointers, that one game, bad.
God, do we
It's not like we can complain about that either. Like.
No, we've done it to so many other teams that when it happens to us, it's like, well, fair enough.
I'm like, I guess sometimes that does happen because I see it happen on the reg.
Yeah.
And then Ohio State, I think even Ohio State fans are expecting a rebuilding year where they hope to make the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, their one returning starter is Jason Tate, who's
a 6'5" center.
Yeah.
A really good 6'5" center.
I really like Jayshon Tate. Yeah. I think he's an excellent player, but that's not necessarily the piece that you want to have to build around.
Yeah. And then I can't believe this, but Big Ten Network has John Crispin, who you might remember as being like the guy on the one good Penn State team ever. And he did like a power ranking, and he put Michigan 9th or something behind Northwestern.
Was he drunk?
I don't think so.
Does he have some weird animus against Michigan? Like, does he hate us?
It's just weird, like, that you would look at this roster versus, I don't know, Northwestern's roster and be like, I'll take the Wildcats.
No. Yeah, I was surprised. I was going through
Sanjay Lumpkin.
I was going through the when UM Hoops and Inside the Hall do a joint top 25 yeah. players in the Big Ten ranking, and they had Bryant McIntosh, the point guard for Northwestern. I believe they ranked him above Derek Walton. And I was just like,
I've seen that guy play.
Like, what? Like, I think McIntosh has some talent, but just no.
Well,
I mean,
everybody
McIntosh versus last year Walton, sure, but yeah. last year Walton was playing on one foot.
Yeah, and I think just people aren't really hip to the idea that last year was a pretty colossal fluke.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's why I was surprised to see it on UM Hoops, because yeah. you know, Dylan had 50% of the input there, and I do understand some of the trepidation, because obviously we saw Michigan basketball last year and they did not look great, and not all of it can be blamed on injuries, because there was some stuff early on in the season where the offense didn't seem to be functioning beautifully.
That is accurate, but I thought...
And they were healthy.
You know, this is still a team that if you don't have those injuries, and the worst they finish in the Big Ten is like 11-7, 12-6, right? Like if they didn't get hurt. And that's after the complete disaster at the five, where McGarry is the last guy ever sanctioned by the NCAA for yeah. pot use. And John Horford's parents mistakenly believe that he's an NBA player being held back by John Beilein, and he transfers to Florida, which also has a disaster of a season. But they lose all their guys at the five spot, and then they're playing Cam Chapman a lot, and Cam Chapman is struggling early in the season. So,
and they end up relying on two basically totally undoubted freshmen.
Yes. Basically unrecruited.
Is their offense.
Yeah.
And they finished 8-10 in the conference.
Yes. So one of those things where if you look at the context of this team, one of the youngest in the country, injury racked, and you look at the coach, I'm expecting this team to bounce back in a major way
yeah.
and compete for the title. I don't yeah. know if they're going to win it by three games.
I should add 8-10 in the conference, and they had four overtime losses.
Yeah. So just one of those things where this team is going to be deep. They are going to be relatively experienced. They are going to be full of good players. And I think when you give John Beilein that material, you're going to have a good time.
Yeah, and this team, the potential, I mean, you see, you know, with Duncan Robinson, that's a guy who could bust out and become a massive difference maker for this team. You can see that happening with... obviously, any of the three main stars, mm-hmm. if any of those guys all of a sudden have like a, you know, NBA-type breakout year, which is entirely possible from any of those three guys. You've got Doyle, who could blossom into an excellent big man. There you've got, and then if any one of those guys, whether it's Dawkins rounding out his game,
yeah.
Chapman becoming a viable stretch four, Rockman turning into a lockdown defender.
Yeah.
There are just so many possibilities from these younger guys coming up where any one of these guys adding a facet to his game is going to take this team to a different level. And there are so many of those possibilities out there that I just think with the level of the coaching on this team and the amount of talent they have on it and the depth that they have, it's hard to see this team, even if there's an injury here or there, even if there's a disappointing player out there, it's tough to see them not making up for that and improving a ton from where they were last year.
Yeah, and so a lot of improvement in college comes from freshman to sophomore transitions.
And Michigan has a lot of sophomores.
They do have a lot of sophomores, but even more than that, they have a couple of guys who are experiencing the same freshman to sophomore transition, but they just didn't get to do it last year.
Yes, so they are overdue.
That's Robinson and that's Walton.
Yeah.
Like those two guys had their freshman to sophomore transitions last year. Walton was injured. Robinson was ineligible. And we don't really know what we're going to see from Robinson on a D1 level, but you have the six-man freshman class on which Michigan seems to have hit on at least four, and we're going to see about the other two guys. All those guys will improve. And then you have Walton doing the same thing, and Walton was a top 50 recruit. So this is the highest recruited point guard Beilein's ever had. And once we see him healthy, him as not a freshman, I think he's going to be a revelation. And then where do you go from there?
Yeah. I mean, the more I look at this team, the more that I talk about this team, the more I'm really excited to see them out there, because it's tough to see things going south the way that they did last year, just because of the amount of depth and talent there. And I mean, mentioned the freshman and sophomore leap. We could cheat and throw DJ Wilson in there too because he redshirted last year, but yeah. He was practicing with that team. And then you could cheat in the other direction and throw Mark Donnell in there.
Nah.
You seem less willing to do that.
No, not going to.
I understand.
Not going to take that one.
But I mean, if the big question mark for this team is the backup center,
yeah.
Which I think it is, I mean, that's, you look around the rest of this conference, question marks pop up far before you get to the backup center on most teams, including the teams that are supposed to be contenders. I mean, Wisconsin has lost a ton. Maryland is relying on a freshman, lost Des Wells, who I think people are overlooking that.
They have a lot of depth, I think.
They do have that. And that seems like the clear-cut number one team in the conference.
Yeah. But other than Maryland, I don't see anybody else. And I'm like, well, I think they're probably going to be better than Michigan this year.
Because Michigan State, there are a lot of question marks there.
Yeah.
Ohio State lost pretty much their entire starting group.
Yep. Boy, they picked the wrong year to have a one and done.
They did. He was an excellent one and done.
Yeah, but just like, kind of like Jacob Trouba.
Yeah, getting stuck on a underwhelming team and then leaving and having it crater afterwards.
Yeah. Crap. Now we've done it. We gotta take a break and we're gonna come back with Aces Hockey Podcast. Nobody to pitch it to. My friends are superheroes. None of us have very much money though. They can fly, run fast, read Portuguese. None of us have very much money though. They know judo and yoga, photography, politics. Some of them leap over buildings. Writers, magicians, comedians, astronauts. None of it matters when niggas was hungry. My friends are superheroes. None of us have very much money though. They wear the same underwear as billionaires. None of us have very much money though. Hustlers, beat makers, drug dealers, sculptors, egomaniacal authors and bloggers. Some of them talk to the animals. None of it matters when niggas was hungry. All right, Aces Hockey Podcast. Have you? No.
Not even a second.
Well, I missed the Friday game due to circumstances beyond my control, but I saw most of Saturday's game against RPI. Of course, I went to the Mercyhurst series. And they seem to be the exact same team they've been the last few years. Very individually talented. Defensively, a train wreck. I mean, they've given up so many odd man rushes, goals this year. The goalies are fine, but they're not great. And, you know, I just don't really feel that there's a lot of development from any individual player. So Boone Nieves seems like he's the exact same player that he was as a freshman. He didn't actually play on Saturday. I do like the freshman class, especially the third line they've got going right now. Tony Calderon is a sophomore, but the other two guys on that that line are Cooper Merid. Cooper Marotti, which really bothers me because it sounds like Rhodey to me, but that's how you pronounce his name apparently. And Brendan Warren. And Warren and Marotti are high effort guys who have enough skill to really test teams who are going into their bottom sixes. And I think that's going to be a major asset for the team all year. They don't really have a top line, I guess, scorer. Like, Nieves is not going to get there. He's never going to get there. We haven't seen Kyle Connor be able to dominate a game in the way that like a Larkin was or a Hyman did last year. And so you're really relying on Mott and Compher to score a lot of goals. And they've put in a bunch of goals so far. I don't see that necessarily lasting. I kind of see a season like last year where they're good enough to win a bunch of games, but they're not good enough to win, say, the 30 that they're going to need if they're going to get to an at-large spot in the tournament.
I was about to say, my sense is that the Big Ten is so, so terrible that it's going to really hurt. I mean, it's a one-bid league.
I mean, Penn State,
something crazy happens.
Penn State did split with Notre Dame, but the rest of the league just looks abominable. And having Minnesota take a step back, I don't think Minnesota is going to be as bad as they've looked so far because they played some good teams. But, you know, their first three games, they scored one goal. And if Minnesota is the crappy version of Minnesota that you get every 6 years, then I mean, Wisconsin's terrible. Michigan State's terrible. Ohio State's terrible. The league is going to be
terrible.
Terrible. And is Michigan going to be good enough to dominate that league to the point where they get an at-large bid anyway? Probably not, because this non-conference schedule is a disaster. It has no good teams on it. Maybe BU, maybe Union, but it's a lot of Atlantic hockey. RPI was not good last year. They're not going to be good this year. And so many home games. And given the way they do the RPI now, they overcorrect for home road splits. And in hockey, it doesn't really matter whether you're home on the road, but you get 60% versus 40% of that pie. And Michigan scheduled a lot of home games. So, you know, they're going to, it's going to be rough.
So it's win the conference or bust, basically.
Basically, yeah. Hey, you had input.
Yeah.
Aces Hockey Podcast.
Woo.
So it's just, I mean, honestly, I think I'm just kind of playing out the string this year with this, with the Red Berenson era. And I don't want to.
Which sucks.
I don't want to dump on Berenson at all. You know, he's a guy who.
He's red. You know?
Yeah. He made the program. He is the program. It's unfortunate that they've fallen off right now, but he has at least set Michigan up with a pretty obvious and excellent successor. I just don't feel that this team is going to be materially different from the last few that had a lot of individual talent but didn't put it together and make the tourney.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that they have to kind of ride out the string like this, but on the plus side, it seems like they've got a lot of talent there when the Mel Pearson era does start.
They do, and I think Mel Pearson is going to walk onto that roster and be like, nice.
Yeah.
And then, as we've seen with what he's done at Michigan Tech, I mean, they were a two seed in the tournament last year before he came. You know, I went back and looked at their record, and they had like 2 years in the past decade before Mel Pearson where they won double-digit games. They were always like a team that went 5-27-2. And Pearson shows up, immediately makes them approximately 500, which is the best sustained stretch from Michigan Tech in decades. And then last year, they are a legit high-end tourney team. It's a slam dunk. So, you know, it's not a Lloyd Carr situation.
No.
And that's nice. So, but I just don't feel it happening this year. And we'll see what they do with Yost after this year. Cause, it's dead, man. It's
yeah,
really,
but I don't want to go back to games cause it bums me out to be in there compared to what it was when I was growing up.
Yeah. The last renovation really wrecked it. So they took all the, there's hardly anyone on the glass anymore. They keep reducing capacity. Instead of a grim barn of death and blackness, it's bright and chromy. It's pretty, but it kind of ripped the soul out of the building, which is
too bad. That place had a lot of soul.
Yeah, but what are you going to do when Dave Brannon actually gets to do something? That. But whatever. Mel.
He's gone.
Mel will come back in Michigan. We'll be pretty good next year. This year, eh. So this has been Aces Hockey Podcast. Anything?
The Dayquil is just totally
the Dayquil. Yeah, well, maybe if you were less like Ricky Doyle.
I know.
Things would be going better for you. All right, we are out. Goodbye. Stop listening. Soon.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am a Sandbender along with Brian Cook, and blame the Dayquil for just whatever.